Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
At Progressive, we know there's nothing like the feeling of riding a motorcycle with your crew on the open road. It's a primal, wild freedom. A feeling that would be impossible to recreate on the radio. Until now. Hit it, sound effects guy! No. You know, we really lost our stride at the end there. Get 24/7 roadside assistance with Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Roadside assistance subject to policy terms and limits and may require comprehensive coverage.
You gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
So crazy about. It's just music.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, we've got a best of live performances at the show.
Listeners out there in New York, in Minneapolis, and in Unalaska, we're big in Alaska, you know that, Greg.
We are.
Unalaska. I have not heard these performances because in some cases they were taped when we were only airing here in Chicago. And so it's a good time for everybody to catch up. We have this incredible performance facility here, the Jim and Kay Maybe Studio, and to see our public radio colleagues crane, like all of a sudden, like, is that John Cale walking in? Is that Billy Gibbons? Holy cow, who are those guys bringing in here? Now, usually it's like, you know, the governor. Who cares?
Yeah, but we got the real rock and rollers. Rock and roll, I'm telling you. Featuring performances today from Colin Molloy of the Decemberists, Jenny Lewis of Rilo Kiley, who put on an extraordinary solo album earlier this year, and we got some music from that. The Black Rebel Motorcycle Club in a stripped-down duo format, which I thought really showed another side of them that most people may not realize
no,
they
that
have.
Was cool.
Feist, the fantastic singer-songwriter from Canada, and Art Brut, one of our very favorite bands from the UK.
Woo!
Not only most engaging guest,
yeah,
but funniest, and also gave a fine performance at the studio. But our first guest is, I think, indicative of really where we wanted to go with this show when we moved over to public radio. I don't think we could have picked a better first guest, which was John Cale, the founding member of the Velvet Underground, and on the occasion of a very fine solo record called Black Acetate. He came into the studio with his touring band and gave a terrific performance.
This is November of 2005. John with the band and doing an interview. We started out by talking about some of the legendary records he's produced.
You as a producer, as a guy who sort of set the template for a whole generation of music by producing the debut albums of the Stooges and Patti Smith and Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers, and now your interest in hip-hop leads me to believe, I mean, do you ever have the notion of going back in the studio and saying, geez, what if we work in some hybrid areas with some of these newer artists that you're admiring, you know, Pharrell Williams and Snoop Dogg, people like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to spend an afternoon with Dre. Yeah, but, you know, the hybrid is the answer. There's always a new hybrid around the corner.
you're able to intellectualize it now, but was that kind of thought in your mind when you were producing those records, which became timeless back then?
No, that was really about the personalities. I mean, the minute you met Patty, that was it. You knew that there was really a vision there.
And it was just a case of,
Iggy, right? You know, you got 5 days to finish, record, and mix an album.
Yeah.
So you get it on.
How would Fear or Guts have sounded? You know, those great records from your island years have sounded different if you had Pro Tools at that point. I mean, it seemed to me that you were working fast and dirty, and those are raucous rock albums.
Yeah, but I had Manzanera and Brian to help.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still a case of these are the changes, but you come up with the guitar part. You know, I don't care what key the song is in, this is the guitar part. And I like that.
John, you are always going to be followed around with wherever you go, as long as you live, and then when you die, you will still have John Cale, founder of the Velvet Underground. How does that legacy hold up for you? I mean, I know there's been a lot of ups and downs, some acrimony there. I was in your apartment in New York when you and Lou were exchanging faxes.
The famous fax war, yeah.
And not liking each other so much. Obviously, it was a nice opportunity to play again with Sterling Morrison before he died. But how do you feel about that legacy being attached to your name?
I mean, you can't be anything but proud of it. I mean, I don't think we did anything that was really awful. If we inspired a lot of people, that's all you can hope for, you know.
But your career has never been about dwelling in the past. Your beef with Lou was that you wanted to move forward and write new songs and to improvise and to not be stuck in one place. You could make imitation John Cale music for the rest of your life, and people would pay to come see you.
Yeah.
You could just rewrite Fear.
I'd become a really nasty old man if I did.
Speaking of nasty, I wanted to ask you, my favorite quote in What's Welsh for Zen, your autobiography with Victor Bakris, is, it says, you're in college, still in Wales, prior to coming to America, and you got voted by your peers the most hateful student in the school. You've always been so nice to me. To Greg.
I know. Those are the days.
Yeah, we want to know what you did to earn that, John.
I like to know that.
Are you still angry?
Yeah.
And it comes out on some tracks on this album.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good creative. I'm glad I've got a creative outlet for it. I mean,
it keeps you from getting on the
roof. I wouldn't
want to
be in politics, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're great moments of beauty on Black Acetate as well, John. You're here in the studio with your band, and I think playing a song like Set Me Free would be a great example of that.
You if she should set you free.
Man, that was Set Me Free from John Cale, his most recent solo record, Black Acetate, as performed right here on Sound Opinions.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and we are taking you through some of the interviews and performances over the first year of the show that you may have missed, unless you've been podcasting. And even if you have, they're worth hearing again, because this is some great stuff. Colin Molloy's band, The Decemberists, has just released their Capitol Records debut album. It's extraordinary. We reviewed it just a couple of weeks ago on Sound Opinions. But when Molloy came in to see us in January, he was on a solo tour playing in sort of stripped-down acoustic mode. He played a song by his very first band. It was called Tarkio. This is Tristan and Isolde.
Would you like to go out tonight? Said Tristan to Isolde. It's a lovely night to go to the Odeon. Sit in the back row. I'm sick of staying in. Oh, so they threw on some clothes, wandered slowly down the street, lit by lantern lights. Through the market square, studied the marquee, bought two tickets and some popcorn. And on the screen, the hero stands with female lead, hand in hand, and says, God, I love you, but you trouble me. She pushes him away. And as the credits rolled, Tristan turned to Isolde, said, what did you think? It was okay, I guess, but that story's pretty old. It's a bit cliche and hackneyed, I thought. and back out on the street. They stop for some ice cream, talking quietly. There was nobody in the room in which they sat as he reached across the table. And just as their fingers caught the timidly, he whispered soft and says, God, I love you, but you trouble me. Tristan to his own, said Tristan to his own.
Nice, cool, nice tune
from Tristan and his old.
Thank you.
Colin Molloy's first band, Tarkio. Moved on to the Decemberists, and the Decemberists are sort of regarded, they've been dubbed an orchestral pop band, very, lush kind of orchestrations on the records, elaborate arrangements. But, Colin, when it comes right down to it, it either works as a song or it doesn't when you can play with a single guitar, and I would imagine that's where a lot of those songs start, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, that's one of the nice things about this solo tour is that people, I think, those who want to, can really hear these songs in the way they were originally written and recorded. I demo everything basically just with voice and guitar before I turn it over to the bandmates, so you can just see it in its original form.
And a song like Tristan and Isolde betrays those literary roots of yours. You were a creative writing major, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And storytelling is what you really want to do, whether it's one guitar and a voice or with the entire Decemberist kind of fleshed out arrangement.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to refer to myself as a storyteller. I think there's something kind of trite about that, like calling like songwriters storytellers. I don't know.
That makes you think of like Bruce Springsteen with the guitar on VH1.
Right, that might just be my conceit. But it's just more interesting and more challenging for me to create some sort of narrative, even if it's really literal or really abstract. I feel like the best songs are the ones that feel like they have a nice arc to them and follow similar patterns as you would follow writing a short story, so I guess I just kind of apply the same rules.
Much like the Zombies or some of the bands in the early psychedelic era in England, you're interested in capturing kind of lost eras. I mean, sometimes you're writing about the Victorian period or pre-World War I, or Tristan and Isolde didn't meet at the shopping mall. I mean,
right, yeah. I guess it's just trying to juxtapose the two, the sort of old world aesthetic with more of a modern sensibility. And I think it's interesting you bring up the Zombies, because that was a huge part of the psychedelic movement of the 60s, it was this fascination with Victorian things. I think that goes back to the fact that the Victorian age actually was really involved, this sort of colonial era for England was really interested in exotic, faraway climes, Persia and Asia.
Before the sun faded on the empire.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that kind of excitement about the exotic and is what really flavored the psychedelic era and then in turn, has influenced modern pop music.
It gets you away, too, I think, in listening to the Decemberists albums especially. It gets you away from that trope where you're constantly writing about, I broke up with my girlfriend and my heart is shattered and woe is me, I'm so sad. You've really avoided doing that sort of thing, writing these sort of fabulous kind of epics that you're known for.
Which is not to say that kind of writing is bad or wrong, like a whole medium, the whole genre, rock and roll is built around that.
Sure.
And I think that there's a lot of power in the simplicity of those statements. I guess what's just most interesting to me is taking those same sort of emotions, the things that drive pop songwriting and just putting it through a few filters. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of me in the Legionnaire stuck in the desert or, the parade to crown the Infanta and things like that.
That's Colin Molloy. Yes, he is the legionnaire in the desert. He's also...
You can hear how it led to the new four-part, 12-minute suite on the new album. You can hear where it was coming from.
We're going to be back with more of our all-star lineup of best performances on Sound Opinions with performances from Jenny Lewis, the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, and Art Brut. That's all going to be next on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
Ticker tape parade. When the plastic on the safe was blown away, and we all gazed from eye to eye as we mouthed our silent goodbye. Stinks of slumber and disaster. Two words I spoke on the tap wire. I was of poor folk, but my mother had a rabbit fur coat. Then a girl of less character pushed her down the LA River and over that rabbit fur coat.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times. My partner is Greg Kot of the Chicago Tribune.
And that great voice you just heard moments ago, that belonged to Jenny Lewis. She's probably best known for being the lead singer in the band Rilo Kiley. We know and love her as the solo artist Jenny Lewis, who put out a great record earlier this year called Rabbit Fur Coat. It's an album filled with what I like to call secular gospel music, which is basically taking the sound of gospel, that haunted fervor that you associate with those great gospel records of the first half of the 20th century, and taking it into a more modern secular area. She's singing about everyday life, bringing that sound to it.
No, absolutely. And Jenny came into the studio with her band, which included the backing vocalists Lee and Chandra Watson, who also put out a really good record on their own last year.
Yep.
The Watson twins are very much part of the sound of this album and are part of this performance. But before Jenny played for us, we asked her about the religious and spiritual songs that sort of run through the whole disc.
I didn't really intend to write a record about believing or disbelieving in God. And I think the beginning of the record with a song like The Big Guns kind of poses these questions. And by the end of the record, I don't think I've really figured anything out at all. Kind of just chasing my own tail a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I don't really pretend to understand, nor do I intend to preach to anyone. But I think, you know, the songs are definitely secular, but I think the girls, of course, bring a gospel element.
Yeah, can you speak to that a little bit, Lee and Chandra? You know, your background and how you connected with Jenny in terms of this kind of music.
I would say, well, we started singing in choirs in Louisville, Kentucky, which is where we grew up. We learned how to sing harmonies there, but it was kind of something that came very easy to us. I think being twins and being sisters, it's something that you just sort of innately know where that person's going to go in their harmonies. You know, it's something that we've always kind of had this style of singing. And when we met with Jenny, the songs just immediately clicked, especially with that song, like the call and response aspect of it. Doing that, you know, came naturally to us, and we've just sort of...
We come from, like, you know, country and bluegrass music, and that has a lot of gospel and religious influence in general. So I think that has helped, and we love soul music as well. So it sort of all kind of comes together to make a pretty picture.
Well, it sounds great, and I think it was kind of unexpected, Jenny, from you. People didn't realize maybe that you had this side to you, you know, listening to the Rilo Kiley records, which are more, you know, pop records, pop rock, and this is soul gospel side to you. And I know that you've mentioned this Laura Nyro record that she made with LaBelle, Gonna Take a Miracle, is kind of a signpost for you. And again, you know, it's not like, yeah, I was listening to Black Flag B-sides. I was listening to Laura Nyro, you know. So talk a little bit about that influence on this record.
I don't know if this record sounds anything like that great Laura Nyro record, but all I know is that it was the first record of my mother's record collection that I fell in love with. And we would sing along to it, you know, on Sundays in the kitchen while making breakfast. So it was really important to me. And I think it sort of left with me the desire to sing with women. Having grown up singing with my mom and my sister, it kind of made sense to then sing with the girls. But that's just a great record. And we've been touring a little bit, and we do a song from that record, which isn't actually a Laura Nyro song, but it's called I Met Him on a Sunday.
Well, I met him on a Sunday. Ooh. And I missed him on Monday. On Tuesday, ooh, 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 ooh. And I dated him Wednesday. Ooh, 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 ooh.
It's great to just kind of pay homage to one of my favorite records.
And I take it this kind of music maybe didn't fit onto a Rilo Kiley record.
I don't know if that was really, if I was really aware of that. I think when you're in a band, people tend to want to participate. So a song like Rabbit Fur Coat wouldn't make it on a Rilo Kiley record. There would be a shaker or a synthesizer or, you know, something going on underneath. So I guess with this, I wanted to kind of let the songs be in the forefront and then the voices. And I think some of these songs could have possibly been on a Rilo Kiley record. And I recorded a couple of extra songs for this record that didn't make it on the record that it'll probably end up on the next Rilo Kiley record.
It's interesting, Jenny, that you mentioned Rabbit Fur Coat, the title track, because in addition to being stripped down, it's also intensely personal, I think. Unless you're portraying a character. When you have someone talking about the mixed blessing of the $100,000 childhood, it's a question I'm certain you were sick to death of, but you were an actress at an early age. And, I mean, I heard it and said, wow, here's a really personal song about the challenges and also the good things but mostly the challenges. In that song, you have a drug-addicted mom, stage mom, kind of managing the career of this kid.
I think, you know, there are some characters at play in that song, and it's a complex sentiment within a very kind of simple song. You know, the chords are very simple. And there are elements that ring true, but I think it's important to say that my life is not quite that interesting. So
yeah. But in general, are these more personal songs than what you do in a band setting?
Not necessarily. I think there have been some pretty personal songs, you know, on the last three Rilo Kiley records. Again, you know, it's tough to know where the truth ends and the lying begins.
Yeah. Well, there is that question of authenticity. I mean, so many critics, not particularly Greg and myself, are obsessed with that question. You know, Greg and I have interviewed any number of old bluesmen who, you know, are singing the back porch blues, but they got out of the Cadillac, you know, when they were going to do it. But the alt country world is so obsessed with this notion. Is she real or not? You know, and I mean, does that sort of ever bother you?
Well, I think it's important to understand California. I'm from California, and that's, you know, if you think about some of the music that came out of Central California, you know,
sure.
The Hillbilly Swing and Bob Wills.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this kind of music made its way out west. So don't exclude us because I'm not from the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that's very true. You get outside L.A. and there's some real pockets of very rural and very country-influenced stuff there. There's no doubt about it.
Bakersfield.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Bakersfield. Mm-hmm. They have it.
Why don't you guys play another tune? Tell us about it. What are you going to play?
We're going to play The Charge in Sky. One, two, three, four. If I run uphill, I'm out of breath. If I spend all of my money, then I've got no money left. If I place all of my chips on only one bet, I'm all in. But it's a surefire bet I'm gonna die. So I'm taking up praying on Sunday nights. And it's not that I believe in your almighty, but I might as well have
name is on your dollar bill, which just became cafe. For the evangelists, the communists, the lefts and the rights, and the hypocrites and the Jesuits and the blacks and the whites, it's in the belly of the beast, in the Chicago streets, or up in Laurel Canyon, the village of the Middle East. It's been happening long enough to mention it. Have a mention, my parents are getting back together again. It's been 25 years of spreading infection. Somehow we're not affected. So my mom, she brushes her hair, and my dad starts growing Bob Dylan's beard, and I share with my friends a couple of beers. Orlando streets, in the belly of the beast.
Wow, that was The Charging Sky. Great performance by Jenny Lewis and her band, as well as the Watson Twins. We can't forget them. Such a crucial part of that sound, right here on Sound Opinions.
As we continue our best of live show here on Sound Opinions, we're going to turn to the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club from up in the Bay Area. Peter Hayes and Robert Turner of the band came through town in support of their mostly acoustic album, Howl, this past March. It's a different sort of record, Greg, and a different kind of performance from BRMC.
I like the way you guys have just completely exploded all the attempts to sort of stereotype you guys. People seem to think they had you figured out after the first album, and now the third record, Howl, you compare the third album to the first one, and you think, wow, there's two different bands here, but it's when in fact it's one and the same. The first record was really dense, layered, almost a forbidding kind of electric assault, and now you've made the very stripped-down acoustic record.
Yeah. On that first record, everyone was saying, these guys are just redoing the Jesus and Mary Chain. Did that bother you?
We'd always, you know, anytime we'd be interviewed and it would be a question about, you know, what are your influences, it would be My Bloody Valentine, Mary Chain and Stone Roses and Bob Dylan and Sam Cooke, and, you know, we'd name them all, and then we'd read the interview and they would cut the Dylan and the Sam Cooke out, and they would kind of make a point about, oh, they're a very British sounding band, and they would try and spin their article the way they needed. We'd always, you know, we were trying to warn people what was coming best we could. It was just always kind of, you know, edited down. So this record wasn't edited down. This is the other side of the coin, I guess. And it was always coming. My heart was always with kind of old kind of staple singers and Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and a lot of kind of more things like that, that I think is kind of the most, for me, like, if I could do that for real, I'd probably skip out on this rock and roll thing and do that, but I'm no, you know, soul singer, so I just think that music just comes from the heart and the gut, and so I feel it a bit more than anything. So gospel song and some things like that, I just wanted to try, you know, it's kind of the way we look at it.
When I reviewed the album, I compared it to an experiment like the Rolling Stones, Wild Horses. They were out of their genre element too. But, you know, by paying homage to this music they love, they came up with something completely fresh and new and just one of their most heartfelt songs, which is how Howl struck me from the get-go.
Right on. Thank you. I guess the only thing is, like, we didn't want to do anything we couldn't pull off. Even if your heart's in it, but maybe your chops aren't, you know?
And there also seems to be an element of courage, you know, letting your guard down a little bit, letting people hear you guys kind of a little bit less in a more intimate setting, too.
A fuzzbox covers a multitude of sins. You guys got some good fuzzboxes.
You know, did it take some personal courage to get to that place where you could sort of do that and be more exposed like that?
We had to practice. We had to actually learn the instruments for real. That was kind of the challenge, you know? Because you weren't gonna stand up there and try to do something that you couldn't do. So that was what made it easier. You know what I mean? Like, you actually had to, like, go through with it. I had to actually sit down and really write these words because there's nothing standing in front of them anymore, you know? The stories had to actually hold and carry you. That was a good challenge, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And
you can get away with a lot with distortion. Yeah, you can make mistakes all over the place and never heard. You know? You can't really get away with it.
And there's nothing wrong with distortion. We're both distortion lovers here,
big
believe
fans.
Me.
It's big fans.
I can't play guitar, so yeah. I'm a bigger fan.
You're doing okay there, Pete, I got to say. You're doing all right on that acoustic.
Well, and you guys wound up playing a lot of instruments that you don't actually play, right? I mean, there's mandolin and trombone and...
Yeah. Well, we played that in high school, if that was the thing that I... We didn't know it. We were in different grades. He was like a year above me, but we were both in band. We were both trombone players. We didn't know it until like just a couple years ago.
Wow. Yeah. So this was in San Francisco?
We both tried to keep it as quiet as we could. You don't brag about that one very often.
We're with Black Rebel Motorcycle Club on Sound Opinions on Chicago Public Radio. What do you guys got for us?
Well, we got Shuffle.
Yeah.
Well, everything's going down. Nothing seemed to feel the same. No one seemed to know my name. No one seemed to go my way. But who knows if I'll see you again? But who knows if I'll see you again? Don't care if I do, darling. One for the soulmate dreamers, one for the wicked man, one for the peaceful protest that keeps the war in demand. But who knows if I'll see again. She knows if I'll see you again. Here comes time. Won't save our souls. Time. Time won't save our souls. Time won't save my soul, no. I never thought I'd see it coming. I never thought I'd ever know. Nothing seemed to take me over. Nothing seemed to let me go. Who knows if I'll see you again? Probably not, darling. Who knows if I'll see you again?
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Peter Hayes and Robert Bean of Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. True or false? Black Rebel Motorcycle Club was Brando's biker gang in Wild Ones, right?
Yeah.
There you go. All right. I wanted to make sure I had that right.
What was the other gang's name?
Oh, man, I don't know.
The Beatles.
Really?
Mm.
Wow.
That's a good trivia question.
That is a great one. Kind of takes guts, though, in San Francisco to come out with a name like that. I mean, that's like Hell's Angels Central still, right?
I don't know exactly. A little bit.
We got trouble once we left San Francisco. Once we started traveling around the country and you get motorcycle gangs coming out and being, you know, a little bit put off and... not really knowing what's going on, and then they would just see Black Rebel Motorcycle Club on this marquee, and they'd come and they'd inform us that you have to be sanctioned by the Hell's Angels to call yourself a motorcycle club. Which, you know, it's a thing they take seriously, so we understood, but we'd also say, you know, we're not trying to be anything, we're just a band coming through town and buy them a beer and...
Yeah, turn up the fuzz box.
And hope
they don't throw anything.
As loud as possible.
Now, fellas, just put those pool cues down, let's all sit down and have a beer.
They're good guys. And then they teach you a little something about the real story of that film, you know, because it's a true story, and And it was the first story that any motorcycle gang was ever anything but just nice, could bring home to mom and dad. And then all of a sudden they had this horrible reputation. Mm-hmm. They're just old air, you know, like Air Force pilots that wanted to hang out together and still ride bikes. And that was all it was. And then they became the bad people that, you know, you don't want to see come and roll into town.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you guys for coming in. This has been a complete treat.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, guys.
Gotta love the trivia, Jim. I had no idea that the Beatles was the name of the other motorcycle club in that movie.
I did not remember that. No.
So you get bonus points for listening to Sound Opinions. Not only do you get these live performances, but there's all sorts of trivia you can drop at parties that it's going to impress people.
Yes, indeed. You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. It is our special Best of Live Performances and Interviews edition. When we come back, we have a beautiful solo performance from Feist of the very interesting Toronto music scene. And then the perfect capper for this show, the endlessly entertaining Art Brut. This is Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis of the Chicago Sun-Times. My partner is Greg Kott of the Chicago Tribune. We're going to have a bit more now of some of our favorite guests from the show's first year.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kott of the Chicago Tribune, and Jim DeRogatis is my partner from the Sun-Times, and we're here with Leslie Feist, otherwise known as Feist. She's got a solo record out, and in addition to her tenure in Broken Social Scene, a indie rock band from Toronto, and a collaboration with her former roommate, Peaches, which is, how would we describe Peaches?
Well, if people aren't familiar with Peaches, I mean, that's kind of an electro clash, I think, is what generally is used to describe. But, you know, she's kind of a hip-hop underpinning and this avant-garde electronic stuff and rapping more than singing.
Very in your face. I mean, it's very confrontational.
Yeah, she's just Peaches. There's no other word for Peaches.
That's, I go with that.
She's
so, beyond description.
So, Feist, you've been across the board. You've done everything there is to be done in music, it seems like. Indie rock band.
Oh, my God. I don't play the
violin. This
kind
of performance art thing. Now you're doing sort of a more subdued singer-songwriter kind of approach. What haven't you done?
I don't know. There's plenty. I mean, up until a couple of years ago, I felt silly even saying I was a musician sitting next to someone on an airplane in case they were in some philharmonic and they'd say, well, what do you do? And at that point, I wear aerobic outfits and jump around with a sock puppet.
Yeah. Well, Peaches does have this element of absurdity in performance art, which is why I think anybody who only knew you from that context, or for that matter, who only knew you from Broken Social Scene, was really surprised by Let It Die. It's your debut album. It's had this long, slow build, kind of garnering buzz on the underground. It's sort of cocktail exotica, you know, like cool lounge music. I mean, Jewel, if Jewel had taste.
Good Lord. Where's the door?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what genre would you say you're working in?
Well, I think it's always harder to put any kind of title on something that's coming from the inside. You know, I don't really know where it once it comes out, where does it land, you know? And depending on the country and the ears listening and the person and the context they're going to be comparing to of all the records they've had in their life, every person has some other, you know. I've actually been able to completely detach myself with a good ironic distance to laugh at all the descriptions I've heard,
yeah.
Because people compare it to stuff I've never heard and then stuff I have, and I, like, you know, every instance is,
yeah,
is really funny for me, because...
Well, that's fair enough. I think, you know, a lot of musicians do feel that way. What about, if you had to say someone that you most emulated that you wanted to...
Oh, geez. Well, I don't know. I think emulation, you lose the battle even before you begin. I mean...
Sure.
Probably there's... everybody, we're all just sponges, and we take in the things that we listen to and read. And, you know, I always say that my musical influences are equally... interactions I have with people on the bus, if they're kind to me or really
yeah,
horrible
yeah.
to me, you know, that stuff all finds its way, comes out again in some. But so I'm sidewinding your
well, no, it's, you know,
dodging the question but doing it charmingly.
It started out exactly as you're sitting here, really, with a guitar and your voice and a 4-track tape recorder, basically. I mean, that's...
yeah, exactly. All that Peaches stuff and the Broken Social Scene stuff and a lot of other collaborations I did in Toronto, all that was happening simultaneously. And on any given weekend, someone could happen upon the little coffee house kind of place called Say What in Toronto, and I'd be playing a solo set with my 4-track with some backing tracks that I'd recorded at home that afternoon, and solo's show. And then on Friday with By Divine Right, this rock band that I was in for a few years, where I was just a rhythm guitarist and I didn't sing, and
mm-hmm.
I got to just jump on top of the monitors and play rock guitar. And they could walk into that on the Friday, and then Saturday it could be at an art gallery with Peaches and those early days. And
yeah.
that could happen any given weekend.
Well, before we, people who haven't heard you, why don't you play us a song and they'll...
Okay. First song on the record, and it's called Gatekeeper. It's time to begin as the summer sets in. It's the scene set for new lovers. You play a part, painting it a new start, but each gate will open another. June, July, and August end. It's probably hard to plan ahead. June, July, and August end. Well, it's better to bask in each other. Oh, gatekeeper, seasons wait for you not. Gatekeeper, you held your breath, made the summer go on and on. Well, they try to stay in from the cold and the wind, making love and making a dinner, only to find that the love that they grew in the summer, well, it froze. Oh, February, April, sand. Don't be fooled by that summer again. February, April, sand. Will I have for the year? Well, we'll never be friends. Gatekeeper, seasons wait for you not. Gatekeeper, you held your breath, made the wind go on and on and on and on. Gatekeeper, gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper from Leslie Feist. What a song. I love that song. You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and we've got one more band to go. Jim, I cannot think of a better way to end this all-star lineup of our first year's live performances than with this band.
One of the bands of the year. One of the bands of the century. You could put them in a time capsule and say, this was rock and roll. Art Brut.
Art Brut with us on Sound Opinions last May.
We are here at beautiful wall-to-wall recordings on the near north side of Chicago with Art Brut, all the way from England, visiting our merry town.
Currently one of our favorite bands in the world.
We were just at South by Southwest Music Conference in Austin, Texas, 1,400 bands. I forgot 1,399 other bands.
Yeah.
This band right here, I went to see them twice. That's how good they were. First time, great. Had a smile on my face. Couldn't even take notes. Just smiling the whole time.
Well, and I told you guys, I went to see that second show. I was hoping you'd suck so that I could argue with him about it. And I walked out of that venue going, oh, Brood, top of the Pulps. And then I went home and I said, well, you know, they can't be any good on record. I mean, all right, that was a fun show, but I'd had a couple of beers. And the record's great.
The guys are all set up. Before we have any more conversation, I think we ought to have you guys play a song for us. Record was out in the UK last year and has caused quite a stir over here. Finally going to be officially released. What do you guys want to play for us first?
I think we're going to play My Little Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Good plan, Art Brut? Yeah, they're all nodding. It's good. Let's go.
He made me a tape of bootlegs and B-sides, and every song, every single song had exactly the same message, a cry for help. Why don't our parents worry about us? What does it take to make our parents worry about us?
Art Brut is in the house.
We're here at Wall to Wall Studios with Art Brut, Eddie, Ian, Jasper, Freddie, and Mikey. Thanks, guys, for coming in. Eddie, tell us about how the band got started. It was at a party, right?
Yeah. I'd had another band before, and they'd all gone to university, so I moved to London to start another band. But everyone was saying no to me because I can't play an instrument or sing. So I was going around this party asking everyone to be in a band with me, and they all said no. And I was getting drunker as I went around too. So by the time I got to Chris, our old guitarist, I was telling loads of lies and saying that I'd had albums out before and I could sing like Frank Sinatra and all this business. And so, yeah, he believed me and said, look, we'd have a band together. And then he taught Freddie, a bass player, how to play the bass. And I thought, to even the scale up a little bit, I better get one of my friends in. So I got my heavy metal guitarist friend, Ian Catskill.
And that is an impressive belt, heavy metal guitarist. With yes. Both Art Brut guitarists have got like all sorts of studs on their belts.
Ian and Jasper are comparing belts right now.
Very, very rock. Too much rock. But Eddie, one of the things that's great about so much of your music is that it's about wanting to make music. And yeah. Despite the fact that I have no talent, I'm not going to let that stop me.
I tried to learn so many different instruments, and I just can't. And then one day I heard, you know, like Lou Reed and Damon Albarn singing and thought, They can't sing. I can learn that instrument. It's just having a voice, do you mean? So
right.
I did that. That's
and a personality.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, you were messing around, though, in bands where it was kind of more about personality and having sort of a stage presence as opposed to any actual musical ability that you through.
In my first band with Jasper, I used to play the Hoover.
A vacuum cleaner.
Vacuum cleaner, yeah.
So would you mic the Hoover vacuum cleaner?
Well, it's really hard to find where the sound comes from. So I was just kind of, I'd end up just kind of like moving the microphone around until I found the right. We played once and someone was just screaming at me, "That's not music," with the hands over their ears.
Wow, that's great.
But I was like, no, it is. It's just clever jazz. You don't understand.
Well, you know, and Jim was mentioning the directness of the lyrics, you know, celebrating being a band, celebrating, you know, my little brother. People take it as kind of irony, shtick, tongue-in-cheek. Yeah.
Like, forming a band, people always think I'm joking in that. And I was just very excited and trying to convince them to let me stay. You know, I was like, we can make Israel and Palestine get along. We can get on top of the Pops. We can, come on. Like a speech almost, you know, so they didn't kick me out. So that was that. And things like my little brother's just concerned, really. He lived at the foot of my bed before he moved to London. I was just worried about him, so it came out in that song.
So that's autobiographical.
Yeah. Oh, they're all true, the songs.
How's your little brother doing now? You seem very concerned about him in that song.
He's okay. You know, he's got his hair cut, got a job in the sea. All works out fine. That's not true.
Terrific. Well, how about...
No, he hasn't hit you up to go roadie with him, with you guys yet, has he?
No. He's got his own band now called Loopy Velez. They're quite good.
Wow. Is there jealousy?
Oh, he's got a song that goes, he formed a band, but we formed a band just a little bit better.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Which I quite like.
We keep referencing the song Formed a Band. Is it possible that we could hear it?
Do you want to? Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Ready up, Brute.
That's We Formed a Band from Art Brute, laying it all out. I don't see how you can say it any better than that. I don't see how you can write a better song than that. One of the songs of the year. We had it here on Sound Opinions. Great all-star lineup of performances that we just aired. Next week, we've got one of our favorite guests ever on Sound Opinions, I would have to say. A man who's been on the show several times in the past and has never let us down in the quality of his answers and giving us also a live performance next week that I think will perk up
a
few ears.
We've got Moby, multi-platinum selling Moby, who's celebrating a bit of a career retrospective with a new Best Of record. Greg, we got some thank yous to say on the way out, as always. Tori Southside Malatia is our executive producer. Todd Bachman is our managing producer and director. Matt Fingers Spiegel was putting together this special Best Of show. He's our producer. Our beloved associate producers are Robin Lynn and Jason Saldana. We got some technical help from Joe Dassault, some legal assistance from Dino Armiros. And after Eddie Argos, I think Jim Russell at American Public Media is the second most unlikely rock star in the world.
At Progressive, we know there's nothing like the feeling of riding your motorcycle with your buddies on the open road. It's a potent cocktail of thrills, laughter, and pure adrenaline. A feeling that would be impossible to recreate on the radio. Until now. Hit it, sound effects guy!
I'm real proud of you, son.
Well, that was terrible. Our apologies for even trying. Quote with Progressive and see if you could save with America's number one motorcycle insurer. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.